This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. When Election Day rolls around every couple of years, the focus tends to be on the biggest races. At the national level, who's going to be president? At the state level, who's going to be governor or who gets to serve as our U.S. senator? But our next guest argues that the political leaders who often get the least of our attention have the most profound effect on our lives. Patrick Wall has served as a campaign staffer on races at all levels, from president all the way down to elections for state representative. In the intro to his latest book, he writes, "Voter turnout in local elections is almost always dwarfed by that in the larger, seemingly more important campaigns. Less money is spent on local races, and most candidates do not have the resources to put up flashy TV ads or full-scale field operations. Many state legislators have little to no staff once elected, yet most of the lawmaking that actually affects Americans' day-to-day lives happens in state capitals, not in Washington." Wall's book is about two Republican primaries for state representative in suburban Chicago in the early 1990s, a story told by some news footage from primary night in 1992.
We're going to take a look at the numbers in one of the Illinois House districts. It's the 55th, and this is a rematch. It gained a lot of attention, national attention in 1990, because this battle was viewed as a litmus test on abortion. It's the race between incumbent Penny Pullen, 15-year veteran, very popular in her district, and challenger Rosemary Mulligan, a paralegal from Des Plaines who's an abortion rights advocate. Now, remember what happened in this race last time. Rosemary Mulligan won it by 31 votes. There was a recount. It was determined she'd won it by 6. It was ultimately went to court. It was determined that Penny Pullen had won it. There was a coin toss, and then it went to the state Supreme Court, where the ultimate decision was in favor of Penny Pullen, saying she'd won it by 6 votes.
The second time around, it was Rosemary Mulligan who emerged victorious, and she'd go on to a long career in the statehouse herself. It's all chronicled in Down Ballot, how a local campaign became a national referendum on abortion. The book is out now from Three Fields Books, part of the University of Illinois Press. We originally spoke with author Patrick Wall back in January 2024. Because the second half of our show is on tape, we're not taking calls live, but let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org. talk@21stshow.org. Patrick, welcome to the 21st Show. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Brian. I appreciate it.
So let's just, judging by the fact you've been able to write an entire book about these two primary elections that happened more than 30 years ago, this story is something of an outlier when we talk about the attention that local elections get. So let's put this in perspective. How much attention did these elections get at the time compared to other comparable races?
Well, I'll put it this way. The day after the 1990 primary, you had on ABC World News Tonight, Diane Sawyer talking about this election, as well as national groups on the pro-life side trying to downplay the outcome when Penny Pullen, they thought at the time before the recount, had lost, and pro-choice groups talking about how this was a sign that, in their words, if you're out of touch, you're out of office. So national groups were definitely paying attention to it, and even before the outcome, groups had poured in money on both sides of the debate, and you would see this splashed on the front page of the Tribune and the Chicago Sun-Times and on the radio and TV. So it certainly was followed nationally, and the coin toss aspect of it only renewed interest in it later on.
You know, I think I am old enough to remember Illinois as a battleground state on an issue like abortion, but I think to a lot of younger listeners, that may seem like an alien concept where, you know, Republicans have been in a super minority status for quite a while. Abortion is protected in state law. Talk a little bit about the political landscape of the early 90s here in Illinois.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's a great point. In Illinois at the time, in the 90s, was certainly a much more battleground state on that issue. And Illinois has sort of an interesting history with abortion laws. It was, like most places, largely illegal in the 1880s, all the way up until some changes in the mid 20th century. And then Roe came down in 1973. And a few years after that, the General Assembly in Illinois passed a trigger law, which essentially would have outlawed abortion if Roe was overturned. And this is something that happened in states across the country one way or another. It was eventually repealed later, which is a whole nother saga. But In the 1990s, it was a bipartisan issue. I mean, you had Catholic Democrats in the city who were opposed to it, Black Democrats as well, you know, driven by faith to oppose it. And many suburban Republicans were supportive of abortion rights. And we certainly have a long history in Illinois of statewide figures. You have Republican governors like Jim Thompson, Jim Edgar, Bruce Rauner, were all pro-choice. And I believe the last pro-life Republican elected statewide was actually Senator Peter Fitzgerald in 1998. So the landscape has certainly changed as of late. But in the 90s, it was a much more unclear situation. And you even had Speaker Madigan, who would at the time was more pro-life, people viewed as him as, but that obviously changed over time as the caucus changed as well.
Yeah, he, as much as people always said he ruled with the velvet hammer, he did follow his caucus on that issue. We need to take a break in a couple of minutes, but maybe we can just sort of set up the rest of our conversation with some brief sketches. Who were Penny Pullen and Rosemary Mulligan?
Well, they definitely represent two different ends of the political spectrum that still, you know, fight today, especially in Illinois. Pullen was a conservative rising star. She was elected at 29 in 1976, and she became nationally known for a variety of reasons. She was one of the principal people fighting against the Equal Rights Amendment in Illinois, alongside people like Phyllis Schlafly, who called her one of her dearest friends, Reverend Jerry Falwell. And she was appointed to some presidential commissions, which she got a lot of national attention for as well. Notably one in 1987 about HIV AIDS, because she had been, she passed a lot of bills in the General Assembly on that issue. She sort of represents, I would say, the evangelical Republican we speak about today. She's very conservative, deeply religious, but she's not a showy politician. She's someone who sort of works behind the scenes and became very effective at achieving her goals in that way. And Rosemary's on the other side. Rosemary Mulligan was a more moderate Republican. I would say she represents the type of suburban woman who maybe used to vote Republican, but has since shifted. And her driving issue really was the issue of abortion. And she certainly was not afraid to buck party lines on that issue. You know, she had enemies on both sides of the aisle, from conservative Republicans who would challenge her in the primary constantly, and Mike Madigan, who would always have a spirited fight against her in the general. So she could never rest on her laurels in that district, for sure. But they definitely represent two different sides of the spectrum.
Yeah, you have a line in the book about her sort of upset stomach she always had, because she was getting it from both angles. Okay, let me reintroduce our conversation. If you're just joining us, we're hearing the story of Rosemary Mulligan and Penny Pullen, two Republicans who had very different views on abortion and made it into a national spotlight in the early 1990s when they ran against each other twice in a primary race for an Illinois State House seat representing suburban Chicago. All this is the subject of a book called Down Ballot: How a Local Campaign Became a National Referendum on Abortion. We're hearing about it from the author, Patrick Wall, himself a campaign staffer at multiple levels at one time or another. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. For the rest of the program today, we're listening back to my conversation with Patrick Wall, who has served as a campaign staffer on races at many different levels of the political hierarchy. He wrote the book Down Ballot: How a Local Campaign Became a National Referendum on Abortion. We spoke with him back in January 2024, and some of our conversation in this part of the show will reflect what was happening in the world at that time. Because this is pre-recorded, we're not taking calls live, but we always appreciate hearing what you have to say, so send us an email, talk@21stshow.org. Okay, back now to the conversation. Patrick, I'm going to try and pull a few threads together here. I was thinking in the conversation earlier with we had a conversation earlier this week about spouses who sometimes disagree on politics. Somebody wrote in to say that she sometimes sort of tries to retort to her partner by saying, what are you going to do about it? Are you actually going to step up and you know, phone bank or something like that? And we also got a call today in during our earlier conversation with the president of the Illinois State Senate from Craig in Rockford, who said when people talk about dissatisfaction with the parties, he asks, have you ever campaigned, written to Congress, or even written to a local office holder? He suspects the answer for most people is no, and that's why the country is in the condition it's in today. So I wanted to ask you, what is it that goes into someone actually making that decision to decide to run for office? What changes about them? What does it take to push somebody from, you know, an angry spectator about politics, as so many people are today, to someone who, like Rosemary Mulligan, actually tries to do something about it, not once, but twice?
Well, it's funny you mentioned the issue about spouses, because if I had a nickel for every person I talked to and interviewed and writing this story who told me, you know, they knew someone who was a husband-wife team that had a Poland sign in their lawn and a Mulligan sign in their lawn, or vice versa. It certainly split even couples in the 55th at this time, so irrelevant. But to answer your question, I think for a lot of people at the local level, it takes them to get angry or affected by some sort of issue. This all stemmed from a Supreme Court ruling that sent things back to the states. In 1989, the Supreme Court of the United States came back with its Webster ruling, and that essentially allowed states more leeway in restricting abortion. People thought at the time that it might be the first chance for the court to overturn Roe v. Wade, but they didn't. And so Penny Poland introduced a abortion law similar to the one that the court had recently upheld, and it caused a stir in her district. And so there was a rally that took place, which was not unlike many rallies that took place in the Northwest suburbs, you know, on the pro-choice side demonstrating, on the pro-life side demonstrating, oftentimes outside hospitals and things like that, or clinics. And so Rosemary Mulligan just was asked to attend a rally in Park Ridge in 1989, and people were demonstrating against Poland. And at one point during the rally, someone yelled, one of you has to step up and challenge Penny Poland. And she thought about it. She was certainly motivated by that issue. She thought she wasn't being represented in the legislature. And so her and a group of women were sitting down after the rally at a diner, a Pickwick Theater, and they would try to convince her. And she was already convinced. So she said, you know, for 2 cents, I'd do that. And one of the women pulled out 2 pennies and put it on the table, and that was it. So all it took was 2 cents for Rosemary Mulligan. She was ready to go.
Good thing we didn't have a state ethics investigation branch at that time. all right, so there's so many threads to pull on here, and we have limited time, but let's talk about the closeness of the 1990 primary election. This is the first time they go up against each other. I mean, it was really came down to just a small handful of votes, which is something worth remembering when people are considering how they cast their ballots in these down ballot races, right?
Absolutely. Well, on election night, it came down to just 31 votes. And at the time after the election, they realized there had been just a minor error at a polling place that had been double counted. It's the sort of thing that happens pretty frequently and is resolved, but usually doesn't make a difference if it isn't a close election. So then there was a recount, and they went through, picked out which ballots were had dimpled chads or issues with them that they thought might count one way or the other. And they went through that process, and eventually a circuit court judge ruled a tie. They were counting through the ballots, and he wasn't actually keeping track when it happened. And one of the attorneys, as he reached the last one, said, "Judge, I believe we have a tie." And it was 7,387 to that same number. So they went to a coin toss, and that's how they decided the election, which was really a formality because it just decided who would appeal the case to the Illinois Supreme Court. And eventually Poland won the 1990 election by just 7 votes. But it set an important precedent 10 years later on the Gore, Bush v. Gore case, and it was later cited in that.
Amazing. So, all right, Pullen wins, serves two more years. Mulligan decides to challenge her again in 1992. What had changed by that time?
Well, there was one significant change at that time in 1992. The maps were being redrawn, and Rosemary Mulligan had decided that she was going to run no matter what. And she really never stopped running after that 1990 loss after the Illinois Supreme Court ruling. And so she was getting ready to run, and the redistricting process was happening. And for the first time in a long time, it was controlled by Republicans. So they were doing the usual crafting any political party does to try to gain their strength. And they had moved maps around in the suburbs. And conveniently, Mulligan's house was cut out of the district by just a few blocks, which
Old
obviously
story in
upset.
Illinois politics. This has happened to numerous officials over the years. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And for some people, they would say, well, that's, forget it. I'm not going to sell my house. They won. But she decided, no, I'm going to run. And if I win, I'll sell my house. And that's exactly what she did.
And she moved because, unlike when you're running for Congress, you don't have to live in the district you represent, but that is not true for the state legislature. We have another clip here. This is Rosemary Mulligan getting interviewed on the night of the 1992 primary, really putting things in perspective. Let's listen to that.
Did you expect a cliffhanger again? There are two different things happening in this campaign. Your district was remapped, and of course, you had O'Malley as the third challenge. Were you expecting a close race once again?
I don't think if I ever continue this as my life's work, I'll ever expect anything but a close race after what happened last time. Yes, I expected a closer race than this.
All right.
What did you make of that, Patrick? Did people expect 1992 to turn out the way it did?
Well, I think certainly both sides continued to push as hard as they could and to bring out, national, as much national attention as they could. Nobody just, like I said, rested on their laurels. Penny Pullen had all sorts of national figures who were supporting her. The McCaskies were supporters. The owners of the Chicago Bears held fundraisers for her. Phyllis Schlafly sent letters for her, and Henry Hyde, whose district at one point overlapped with hers, and who in Congress is the namesake of the Hyde Amendment, which some people know as a federal law that prevents certain funds from being spent on abortion, campaigned for her as well. And so, no, people certainly didn't think it would be any less competitive than the last time. And as I said, Rosemary Mulligan never stopped. She continued running, and like you mentioned, had that pit in her stomach, just kept on pushing.
Yeah. All right. One more clip I want to play. This is again from the ABC station in Chicago. Reporter Alan Krashevsky summing up the essence of the race, and then we'll hear, what Pullen said on TV after she conceded.
2 years ago, no secret, this was the cliffhanger race. The nation's attention was upon it. It really became the issue of abortion, of course, became very much a vocal thing that was back and forth. Once again, I know in this campaign that was the case as well. But what I do want to ask you is, and it was not an easy campaign either. I know, and from some people, outsiders would even perhaps call it a very bitter campaign, from both sides I'm talking about now. But when you look at how things turned out this evening, is there anything in particular you can attribute it to? Tough question.
It is a tough question, and I really think we're going to have to spend a lot of time thinking about that. I think that it certainly was a hard-fought battle. We have the satisfaction of knowing that we did not swerve on principle and that we did not do anything in this campaign that we could be ashamed of. And so we can walk away with our heads held high. And I think to the people that supported me, that's very important, and I know it is to me.
Patrick, there's a line you have at the end of the book after this 92 race has been decided. You say the campaign was over, the votes had been cast, and the voters, who each candidate had long courted with an exhausting intensity, went back to their everyday lives. What does that say to you about what politics means to our society, especially, for people who aren't as finely attuned to the details of it as somebody who actually works in this space?
Well, I think this is an exception to people paying attention because there were so many, there's so many national tie-ins and a lot of money being spent. But I think it speaks to how we sort of lose attention with these races. And the whole message of the book, I try to tell people, you know, this is not a political book. There's a hero for everyone. If you're pro-choice, you'll admire Rosemary Mulligan for her willingness to buck her party and say whatever she thinks. And if you're pro-life, you will admire Penny Poland for her dedication to her cause. But the one message I have is really that people should stay engaged, not just when election is happening, but all year long, especially when there are things happening on the county and the state level, you know, with your aldermen. There's 130,000 bills introduced in legislatures across the country each year. 23 times as many bills than Congress. And so that's where the action is. But there's an attention deficit. You know, one in three Americans can't name their own governor. 80% of Americans can't name a single state legislator of theirs. And yet the issues that affect us most are those that are done on the state level. And in every state capital across the country, there's a Penny Poland and there's a Rosemary Mulligan, and they're working and they're watching closely. The only question is who's watching them. And that's the purpose of the book.
Mm. Does this, this will probably have to be our last question. Do you still feel echoes of this race? Do you hear the echoes of this race, Poland-Mulligan race, three decades later?
Absolutely. I mean, the parallels to today are uncanny. You have a changing Supreme Court in the late 80s that people eventually are motivated by a decision of theirs on the issue of abortion that sparks campaigns across the country. And we're seeing that certainly with turnout in elections having to do with, you know, ballot initiatives and other initiatives statewide in places like Kansas. We saw the recent one in Ohio where turnout in an off election, which usually has pretty low turnout, was 100% of nearly 100% of the midterm level. So it's certainly motivating people. And I think we'll see it on the national level again. And I think it also teaches us a lot about how voting has changed in this area. This was a controversy caused by punch card ballots and dimple chads, and that's
chads,
not the way.
Yeah, before those were a national catchphrase. Yes.
Yes, and that's not a thing anymore because of the way we vote has changed greatly, and part of the reason that is because of the chaos caused in campaigns like this and campaigns like Gore and Bush v. Gore in the 2000 election. And I like to tell people, you know, if you don't think local politics is interesting, this is an example of how a local campaign was one of the dominoes that eventually helped decide the 2000 presidential election, because in a sense, it led to different counting standards because people were relying on this case, the Poland case, and during the 2000 Florida recount, for the notion that Dimple Chad should or should not be counted. It caused that confusion that eventually, when the Supreme Court came down with their Bush v. Gore ruling, because canvassing boards in Florida were relying on that standard in Poland and other cases, they said it was a violation of the Equal Protection Clause and ruled in favor of Bush. And the reason is because of cases like Poland, which they were citing in Florida. So the next time someone tells you local politics is small or uninteresting or doesn't matter, you can just point them to this case.
The book is Down Ballot, How a Local Campaign Became a National Referendum on Abortion. The author is Patrick Wohl. Patrick, thank you so much. Fascinating conversation, fascinating book. Appreciate your time today.
Thanks for having me, Brian. I really appreciate it.
We originally spoke with Wohl back in January 2024. That's all the time we have for today. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we'll have our weekly news roundup. We'll be hearing the news this week, focusing on Champaign-Urbana. And then in politics, we're at about the midway point of the Illinois General Assembly's spring legislative session. We will talk about where things are. And of course, we'll check in with our Washington correspondent, Linda Kenyon. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We will talk with you again tomorrow.